I'm Umyoho Rengekyo. Hi, thanks for being here. You're welcome. Our sangha still chugging along, growing. Please like or join if you can. Our sangha keeps growing, and I just read a long letter from one of you in the United Kingdom. And I wanted to encourage you once again, all of you, that, you know, we are creating an online sangha, a bunch of like-minded people looking for a solid way to live this life fully to our highest potential, live it well, healthy, through Buddhism, a science of mind, if you will. We can attain our best selves, and finding like-minded people in a time and in a world that's, as Shakyamuni himself described it, very driven by distraction. Look at all the tools of distraction we have that cater to our avarice, our greed, our manipulations, and in Buddhism, anger, but anger not in the respect of physical violence, but anger in the respect of not respecting others or ourselves and behaving in very less than constructive ways, I'll say. And the third thing is foolishness, just behaving out of ignorance. Just, you know, this repetition of what we hear instead of investigating for ourselves to discover our own experience of truth about something. We just repeat, repeat, repeat without even thinking about what we're actually saying or meaning. We just, right? That's our world today. It's full of it. So finding people who are willing to look objectively at the world and their own lives, it's not only difficult, but it can be rather threatening, because people who just repeat what they hear tend to be quite virulent and violent about hanging on to those things. They've sunk their identity into those things, and that's the most human attachment, isn't it? That's samsara. That's what we're trying to break free from, because from that kind of mindset comes all our suffering. So that's a long way of saying to those of you, for instance, in the UK and in other countries, I've gotten emails with long, detailed experiences of their disillusionment with groups they've tried to belong to, and things of that nature, and ended up their own island trying difficult. It's very difficult to practice all alone on your own. And that was one of my biggest motivations for creating this channel. So I would encourage you not only to communicate with me if you need some kind of assistance or interrelationship on a specific aspect of your practice, Buddhism, your life, so on and so forth. But to use the comments in a kind way to discover one another. There are several of you in different countries who might benefit from communicating to one another using this forum, this channel, as your sangha, your open invitation to communicate with everyone, not just those in your own country, but in other countries. We're all going to benefit from the inter-dialogue on practice, right? This is kind of a first. I don't know of an online dedicated sangha to the practice of Lotus Sutra Buddhism, certainly through Nichiren's doctrine and scholarship, right? So let's use this channel any way we can to profoundly support our practice. And as I often remind you, there's a static website, threefoldlotus.com, where I have posted over the years many, many thoughts and answers on typical questions like why Daimoku and how does it work and what's a Gohanzen and so on and so forth. The map of the Gohanzen, of all the personages on the Gohanzen, mandala, so on and so forth. They're all on that website and they're free for you to download, read. If you want to talk about those things, you can email me at tlksylvain@gmail.com. Or talk about them here in the comments where they refer to the video at hand. I still try to communicate with everyone who offers a comment or emails me. We're still able to do that. We're not quite that large yet. Hopefully we'll break 1,000 and then perhaps be able to monetize this channel. But so far, that's monetization isn't my goal. My goal is to strengthen our practice. And so I'm very appreciative for your being here. And now let's continue with the current Gosho, the teaching that accords with the mind's, the Buddha's mind. I was reminded again doing Gangyo. Here I go again. One of the concepts in the meditations of Gangyo that is a struggle for some people is the law of self-manifestation. You know, language is a, how did William Burroughs say it? Language is a virus from outer space. Language can really inhibit us from understanding meaning. And I just want to quickly say, this law, this process of self-manifestation is another way of communicating the nidana, the way of formation, and the formation of energies that again form and form again and form again. It's like those, I forget what culture comes from, probably Vedic culture, where the elephant supports the planet, the earth, the world, but also the elephant is one elephant on top of the backs of two elephants that are on top of the backs of four elephants and so on and so forth, logarithmically getting larger and larger and larger. If you can think of that visual as an indication of how energies coalesce and formations precipitate from that. What we're dissecting here in Buddhism is a life force, the way life itself generates form from formlessness. This is a more technical way, if you will, a modern way of talking about the nidana. The nidana, if you read through the 12-linked causal chain, also on threefoldlotus.com, there's a lot of information on that. You will become more acquainted with the language of formations. And if you pay attention to the first Four Noble Truths from the earliest teachings of Buddhism, Shakyamuni was trying to get us to understand that it isn't the act itself. It is everything that leads up to how that act is formed. The sufferings come from the world of formations, nama rupa in the nidana, name and form. You can't name something unless it has a form. Something has a form, it has an identity, and our minds are distinguishers of identities, right? And so the concept in the meditations about the law of self-manifestation is exactly another way of encapsulating that process that leads to an identity of self, a perception of a self, which is a very temporary and constantly changing thing, right? Life is this series of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, moment after moment after moment, right? And that is a process we broadly call life. And that is the law of instantiation. Everything that happens in our lives is a formation of that process. Follow? All right. The various other sutras, other than the Lotus Sutras, represent the teachings of the Buddha, but if one puts resolute mind and conviction in them, then one is simply following the minds of ordinary people and will never be able to attain Buddhahood. So this is important. Remember, just before we got to this paragraph, we were discussing the teachings prior to the Myoho Rengekyo, our teachings for the benefit of other minds, in other words, communicating in realms that those minds understand. But when we get to Myoho Rengekyo, that sermon is about Shakyamuni describing his practice, the Buddha's mind. And that's the title of this letter. This is why Myoho Rengekyo is so distinguished from all of the, what we call provisional teachings, all the teachings that lead up to and expand our capacity and ability to understand to the point where finally we're getting the method to instantiate Buddha for all of us, no matter what status, race, culture, economic reality, whatever. Every sentient being can instantiate Buddha in their lives by following this methodology of the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Rengekyo. This is why Nichiren created this mandala, to keep us focused on that ultimate truth, Namo Myoho Rengekyo. Resolve your Myoho Rengekyo, Namo Myoho Rengekyo. Okay? If you practice all the other stuff, I mean, that's all great learning tools. They're essential teachings. But what they are fundamentally getting your mental capacity to is Myoho Rengekyo. And so, like a lot of us, we'll start reading the Lotus Sutra and we'll start having questions about, what does this mean? What's all this fanciful language? What reference to what story is that? I don't know that, right? As a Westerner, most of us aren't exposed to these kinds of teachings and folklore, certainly not earlier Buddhist teachings. So we may have to go and read an earlier sutras. And when we read those sutras, they're so dense with conceptual information that when we get that aha moment, I get what this is talking about, I get what this is referring to, we can then go back to Myoho Rengekyo and understand the depth of meaning behind just a single phrase in the Lotus Sutra, right? That's how the scholarship works. And that's what Nichiren is doing. He's saying we're practicing Lotus Sutra because look at what Shakyamuni says here, what he says here, what he says here. All of those validate that, once again, this is how Myoho Rengekyo works. So this is the fundamental teaching of Buddhism, the Lotus Sutra. The Lotus Sutra, he says, is both the teaching of the Buddha and the embodiment of the Buddha wisdom, because it teaches the Buddha mind, not to the mind of others learning about how to practice Buddhism, but the actual awakening process, method of invoking Buddha. If one puts sincere resolve in each character and brushstroke in it, then one will become a Buddha in one's present form, right now, boom. For example, a piece of white paper becomes black when dipped in black ink, and black lacquer turns white when white liquid is poured into it. Just as poison turns into medicine, so ordinary individuals change into Buddhas. Accordingly, we call it the wonderful law. Right? Myoho. And yet the people of today, of both high and low station, look with contempt upon Shakyamuni Buddha, their father in the present world, and instead revere Amida or Mahavaracana, strangers with whom they have no connection at all. That always baffles me. And Nichiren certainly calls it out here. But I cannot understand how this wonderful teacher, Shakyamuni, makes his advent in the world as one of us, another flesh-born being, formation of a man, who in his life goes through all sorts of privations, leaves his worldly possessions of being a prince. I mean, he leaves all that behind in order to solve this problem of suffering that we all life suffers. And he manages to awaken. He manages to reach a state of being that's no longer affected by the world, and yet remains in the world to show and teach others how to accomplish the exact same thing, Buddhahood. And in his teachings, he makes up, he imagines all of these folklore. He uses some that are extant, that's talking to the people's minds, but he also invents many characters, many ideas for people to chew on and learn from, right? He creates Mahavacharana, he creates Amida, he creates Bodhisattvas, all in his stories, his sermons, as tools to get people to conceptualize in their own lives the ideas that he's trying to get them to explore and understand the function of their minds. Now, obviously, he's the one who set all this into motion. He's the one who attained it. He's the one who actually imagined all of these teachings for the benefit of people reaching what he had reached, Buddha. Now, why would people cast him aside and instead follow one of his stories as the method of attainment? It simply doesn't make sense. Does it? Is the guy who invented the car that you drive less important than the guy who washes and polishes it every other weekend or whatever you do with your car? Is he the originator of your car because he knows how to polish it? No. Any reasonable being might appreciate that one, might learn something about the finishes of their car. But they know he didn't create the car or she didn't create the car, right? You want to know how to create the car, you go to the guy who designed and built it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And obviously it didn't make any sense to nature either, because he's calling them out. They treat the father, the originator, Shakyamuni Buddha, their father in the present world, who doesn't mean that Shakyamuni himself is there, but Shakyamuni's teachings, his embodiment in the Lotus Sutra, is their father in the present world, like he is ours. And instead, they revere an imaginary character he created. It simply baffles the mind. In doing so, Nichiren says, are they not lacking in filial piety? So that's a very big thing in authoritarian samurai China or Japan, right? Filial. It still is today, but we certainly don't focus on it as humans have in past cultures, right? The reverence for an elder, the reverence for a grandparent or great-grandparent, the reverence for our father and mother, right? That's just almost unheard of except in certain cultural pockets today. Are they not slanderers of the law, right? Because if they're going to cast away the originator, aren't they in fact practicing in an unfilial manner and therefore slandering the law, making the law of the originator's creation irrelevant? They're fooling themselves terribly, right? When I say this, however, all the people of Japan join together in reviling me. Well, not all the people, obviously, because he has followers. But that's the general tenor. Because they all say that he is promoting something. They've all decided to follow something else. So he's really stirring the waters, and they don't like that. They're comfortable in their little Nembutsu practice. Don't you tell me I'm practicing incorrectly, right? So they hate him. And it is quite natural that they should, for the crooked piece of wood hates the straightness of the inking line that makes it that marks it for cutting, and the dishonest man is not pleased with the honest administration of government. Right? Because not only is he calling them out, but he's calling them out with obvious truth. Within the teachings that they themselves profess to care about and to practice, he's demonstrating that they're astray. They're going against those very teachings. Nobody wants to be told they're wrong, right? But we, you and I, are seeking truth. So if we discover through our own meditation, through our own chanting to this mandala, through our own study, that we've been mistaken for years, perhaps, about what something is or means, it may knock us on our butts. But as Buddhists, we're willing to take another look at it and realize, oh my goodness, what kind of karma is this? I've always thought this, but I was wrong. I was wrong, demonstrably wrong, because in my own mind, this teaching has opened me up to criticism. And now I understand at such a more profound level that I can't even reason why I used to think that other way. That's called changing karma. That's called actual proof. And it's very, very personal. That's why Shakyamuni always used words like innumerable, unfathomable, immeasurable. Because there's so many of us, and there continues to be so many of us, mind, self, adherence to certain patterns, that each one of us has to unlock that attachment, that glue, that epistemological truth that keeps us thinking a certain way. It might be trivial, it might be profound. Right? But this is our personal revolution. This brings us much closer to our Buddha. This is very inspiring. This is why when this happens, we want to take it to this mandala and focus our mind, our Buddha wisdom, so that we can now inculcate, really embed this new understanding. And it develops reverence in it. It develops a profound respect for this practice of enlightening our Buddha nature, right? What else could? No amount of speaking or conviction by somebody else will make you experience your Buddhahood or appreciate it. Only yourself can do that. Only you. And guess what that is? When you do that, aren't you manifesting a new version of yourself when you do that? Aren't you taking the self that's gone on all this long and done stuff through rote and suddenly realize a new truth? Aren't you a new person? Aren't you manifesting a new self? Self-manifestation. It's a core process of enlightenment, isn't it? Let's see where we are. During the reigns of the 91 human sovereigns of our country, there have been 26 persons who committed treason. Among them were men such as Prince Oyama and Oishi no Amaru, my reading skills are lacking this morning. Prince Oyama and Oishi no Amaru, as well as Masakado Sumitomo and the evil minister of the left. When these men concealed themselves in the mountain forest of Yoshino or of the Totsu River, or went into hiding in the waters around Tsukushi and Chinzei, the warriors in every nearby village and the natives of every island in the region set out to attack them. But the distinguished sages, as well as the monks, nuns, and women of the various mountains, temples, and shrines, did not regard them as their particular enemies. In the case of myself, however, men and women of high and low station, as well as nuns and monks and distinguished sages, all look upon me as their particular enemy. So he's illustrating here the profundity of what he's challenging in these people's misbeliefs. That they're far range, it's not just a certain group of people who've been misled. It's every single person, no matter what state whether they be nobles or peasants or whatever. Everyone in Japan has been misled through this traditional repetition of these lesser or misleading teachings. And so, talk about habit. You've inherited this from, like today, think of what you're inheriting from Facebook and YouTube and your local stations and radios and so on and so forth, social media and corporate media and networks, all talking at you from a very specific point of view. If that's the only way you form your opinions about things, then what you become is a megaphone for other people's opinions. You haven't formed your own opinion. You think you have, but you're simply repeating this messaging, right? That's frightening. That's the world we live in. That's the world of anger. It's all manipulation, and it appeals to what? It's a great motivator. If you give people the desire to want something, marketing, and then you provide it for them, satiation, then everybody gets gratified and everyone's willing to do whatever you say so they can get that piece, that carrot, that piece of candy. That's the world we live in. It's a huge propaganda machine. And everything, every now and again, somebody goes, "Hey, the emperor's naked." And a few people go, "He's right. She's right. She sees the truth. Oh my goodness. I need to get under this cloud of propaganda." For a while, it's uncomfortable. And then a lot of them will just go, "Well, it's more comfortable to just go with the herd. Join the mob. Join the group. Join the sect. Be a this. Be a that." It's hard to look for yourself, for your own understanding of the truth, and eschew all that propaganda. It's tough. And it's even at times dangerous. And this is what Nichiren's talking about. He will not be swayed because he has the documents of thousands of years to read, and it's really obvious. But the people that are used to going along to get along, they don't like it. Even if it looks right, it challenges all of their precious little fragile associations, what they've built their identities on, right? Just as hard as it is personally, think of culturally how hard it is, right? The reason is this, he says. All people are concerned about their next lifetime, their future. But the monks and nuns who would appear to ponder more deeply about this matter than other men and women, in fact, set aside the matter of rebirth in the Pure Land, in other words, enlightenment, and merely act as guides in helping people get through this present moment, right? Don't worry about enlightenment. Just, eat this food, buy this bauble, buy a new program, buy a computer, buy a new cell phone. Everything will be better if you just consume whatever we throw at you. Think this way and, don't worry about the future. Just worry about now. Wise persons and sages also are given into insisting that they are correct and superior to others. Of course, they want to keep their influence, right? That their errors They are the true heirs to the teachings of a certain founder, and that they have legitimate claim to a certain domain. They place great emphasis upon fame and personal gain, and give little thought to any kind of serious search for the way, the Buddha way. And so when I, neither hesitating to speak out nor fearing their opinions or others, tell them frankly that they are ignorant persons who have misunderstood the true meaning of the Buddhist teachings, and that they are slanderers of the law, when I deliver a sharp rebuke to them, mindful of the Thus Come One's golden words, quote, you should realize that that monk is betraying the Buddhist teachings, end quote, and trusting in the passage of the scripture that reads, quote, we will be envoys of the world-honored one facing the assembly without fear, end quote. When I do this, censuring those who, quote, suppose they have attained what they have not attained, being proud and boastful in heart, end quote, then how can they fail to turn upon me with hatred and jealousy? Right? Thus, throughout the seven reigns of the heavenly deities, the five reigns of the earthly deities, and more than 90 reigns of the human sovereigns of Japan, no one can match me in the degree to which, for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, I am detested by the three types of enemies. It was no ordinary connection that led you to visit such a man, one who is hated by all persons of both high and low station. Perhaps it is because you were my parent in a previous existence or my brother sometime in the past that you were moved to visit me. Or perhaps it is because you established profound ties with the Lotus Sutra in the past, and the seeds that will lead you to become a Buddha have matured in this present age, that busy as you are in your capacity as a lay member of the society, you have found time from your public duties to give thought to me. So all of these constructs that he's talking about aren't about previous lifetimes. They aren't about the literal meaning of those words. They are about influences, inspirations inside of us that reside in our lives. Things that we know that we either gnawingly hear every now and again, putting doubt into the propaganda, putting doubt into the group we're following, but we squelch it because our desire to belong and just go along to be a part of. Our desire to belong is so great that all those little voices that know better, they just get silenced and quashed over time, right? And if you manage to not lose those voices, excuse me, perhaps those are the little voices that inspire you to come and study Nichiren. That's what he's saying. Nichiren, the reviled one, the one who has the balls to call out the emperor as naked. I refer to that little Western fable a lot because it's so right on the money for us in this latter age. We just go along, but we know better. We at least know that there's something more profound going on, but we don't talk about it because people aren't comfortable talking about that. So it remains a personal thing. And then we feel very alone. We feel like nobody else could possibly understand what we're saying. But they do, because they're all doing the same thing. That's why this Sangha is so important. That's why communicating in the comments is so important. Because the moment we hear somebody else from our town, from our city, from just the fact that they practice Buddhism, maybe they're Italian, maybe they're Brazilian, maybe they're Canadian, maybe they're British, Irish, whatever. And they say something in perfect English or broken English, and we read their comment and we go, oh my God, I think like that. Oh my God, there's somebody else who thinks like I do. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad that person said that, right? Our desire for belonging gets deeply rewarded. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? But that's Sangha. Sangha is people of like mind, searching, clawing, finding their way through the propaganda of samsara. Yes, it is that big. It's propaganda that you yourself hold in your mind, that you've taught yourself over the years, that needs to be taken down, that needs to be opened up and explored, that needs to be broken in order to build it correctly and lead us to our Buddha. One more paragraph. Do we have time? What do you say? Think I should finish this Goso? All right, here we go. In addition, now he's saying to this person, you're coming to me having the chutzpah, this courage, the commitment, the resolve to come and support me and speak to me directly. That's no small feat. So you could say that's deep appreciation from Nichiren for the visit and the offerings and so forth, but it's much bigger than that, isn't it? Nichiren recognizes the difficulty of the journey this person's made, and he himself is in awe of that resolve. Resolve that equals his own. It's amazing, right? And so this is what I mean when I say I appreciate and am so deeply proud of your practice. Because it takes courage to do what you're doing right now. Profoundly courageous act. And the reward from it should knock you on your butt. And it will. Namu myoho renge kyo. In addition, your journey from the province of Totomi to Mount Minobu here in the district of Hakiri in Kai province is over 300 ri, and the lodgings along the way must have been wretched. Ascending the ridges, you came out into the light of the sun or the moon, but descending into the ravines, you must have felt as though you were entering a pit. The currents in the rivers are as swift as an arrow, and the large stones carried along in them prevent men and horses from crossing. Boats are as perilous as scraps of paper cast on the water. The men one encounters on such a journey are rough woodcutters, and the women are like female mountain demons. The trail is as narrow as a rope, and the trees are as dense as grass. What ties from the past existences could have led you to pay me a visit in such a place as this? In comparison, our practice is pretty darn easy, isn't it? Physically, anyway. Shakyamuni Buddha must have led you by the hand, with Chakra as the horse you rode on, Brahma as your companion, and the sun and moon acting as your eyes along the way. Thank you for your extraordinary efforts. So what does he mean? Does he mean Shakyamuni Buddha actually came down and held him by the hand? No. He means that your motivations were anchored in the reward, in the goal, in the depth of profound understanding of your mission. That it wasn't when the trees got in your way and you were swept by a river and that you tried with all your packages and everything else, constantly struggling to get here. What kept you going? Wasn't it your resolve? Wasn't it your deep... It wasn't because you felt some earthly, like, competitive force to keep you going. It was your determination to attain your own Buddhahood. You knowing that you reaching Nichiren would bring great reward to your life and the life of those around you. That's what kept you going. That's what kept you inspired to go through all of this hardship, right? That what was your motivation? Buddhahood. There are many other things I would like to say, but I've caught a cold and I'm feeling quite miserable, so I'll end here. So there he is, Nichiren, the man, right? Always with humility. But look at the attitude. Look at his intent, right? Isn't that what we're all doing with Buddhism? Our attitude and intent is everything for living this life well. And the teachings of the Lotus Sutra give us that strength, give us that insight, that self-manifesting Buddhahood. So he signs that Nichiren. Well, that was quite a go-show. At least it was quite a quite an experience for me. So hopefully I said some things that will add to the meaning of this letter, add to your practice. The whole goal here is to give you food for thought, food for inspiration, something to anchor your thoughts in. Buddhism is for you to discover your own Buddha. Right? So all of these teachings, all of these stories, all of this scholarship, it's all there for you to use to strengthen your Buddha mind. And I hope in some small way, this channel, my static website, the podcasts, that they can provide support. Namu myoho renge kyo. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.